Time for the Home Improvement Show. I am Joanne Brackus, and sitting in front of me is the man himself, Walter Assey, president of Renovco, here to answer all of your home improvement questions, your needs, your problems that you're having with your house, you're thinking about doing something. He is the person to ask. 514-790-0800. That is the call line and the text line. Please remember that if you text, we need that name. How are you, Walter?
I'm doing very good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have to tell you, Walter and I normally chat before the show starts, but I had a specific request from a family member for you. So he came in and I bombarded Walter. So now I'll stop now. We're good to go for the show again. 514-790-0800. One of the things you wanted to talk about, that which we talked about a little bit a couple of weeks ago, was the, I would say, much dreaded kitchen renovation. For you, it's exciting. It's a big project, but it's a lot of money. And you wanted to talk about the planning and the right people, right?
Yeah. I mean, as far as home renovations, I would put the kitchen as one of the most complicated to do.
And expensive, maybe?
Well, expensive as well, and complicated because there's a lot of moving parts. You have the planning, the design, the color coordination, so many colors to choose from, so many designs, so many styles, so much material. So it could be overwhelming. The layout design could also be overwhelming if you don't know what you're doing. We spoke before about not relying so much on your carpenter that is fabricating the kitchen or the cabinet maker for the design element, because they might look at the easiest or the most standard way of doing things versus the most design-friendly way or the most appealing way for you, because it's an investment.
It's an investment, and I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Walter, this is just anecdotal. I know that when every house that we've bought in our lives, when you look at that kitchen, the kitchen has to stand out, right? It has to stand out a little bit.
Yeah, it does. I mean, a kitchen is what sells homes. Let's be very frank about it. From the layout to the design to the space to the planning, it's very important. That's what makes it very particular, because you need time. It's not like you can call on a Monday and have your kitchen renovated on a Friday.
No.
It doesn't work like that.
If you have any questions about kitchen renovations as well, let us know, 514-790-0800, because as you heard Walter just say, it's the selling point of the house. Leah is on the phone, or Leah. Leah, am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's fine.
Hi, Leah. Is it Leah or Leah?
Leah.
Hi, Leah. Can take it away for Walter.
Thank you. Good morning. Love your show, by the way.
Aw, thank you.
We replaced our older oil furnace and heat pump to a new electric furnace and heat pump. In the old system, I could tell when the furnace came on because literally it kicked in. You could tell throughout the house that the furnace was on. Now with the electric furnace, the heat pump is supposed to work up to minus 30, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Well, I mean, it depends on how, correct and incorrect. It depends what type of heat pump you bought. If you bought, because there's still heat pumps out there you could buy that are not minus 30, so they're not as efficient.
So this is the new one.
Okay, so it should work up to minus 30, you're right.
Every so often now, I feel a louder rush of, heat, I guess, coming through the vent. Mm-hmm. Is that the electric furnace kicking in?
When you say louder, can you explain that a bit more?
It's a very quiet system, the heat pump.
Yeah. Well, the heat pump is quiet, yeah. But
right.
I mean, don't forget, the fan have to kick in. So what kicks in is usually the fan of the furnace to push the air in.
So the fan of the furnace.
Correct.
Okay, so that's what I'm hearing, I guess. It doesn't mean it's actually the furnace giving us the heat.
No, it doesn't mean. I mean, and you could easily look at that by looking outside to see if the heat pump is on or not. Okay.
Okay.
Now, I want you to be careful from one thing, because it's a newer installation.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, there is a good technician will have good checklist before they actually initiate the system or start up the system, including checking the fan if it's well bolted, well screwed, because sometimes, because from the manufacturing and the transport, these screws get a bit loose. So you could start hearing some rattling noise coming from the fan. So the fan could be, quote unquote, louder than it should be, or noisier, if, for lack of a better word. In this case, it's because it was not adequately fastened or checked by the technician when they freshly installed your system. So keep an eye out for that, or an ear in this case. If you feel that it's louder than it should, then you should definitely have the fan checked to make sure everything is properly fastened.
Properly fastened. Okay. Yeah. When I questioned my previous company about why the furnace was coming on, they said, well, it has to go through a defrost cycle, and every 90 minutes, the furnace would kick in.
That is also true. That is also true when it needs to go in the defrost cycle. But that goes for a very short period of time.
But every 90 minutes.
Well, I mean, that could, I presume that could be reprogrammed. You could ask, if you find that it's going on often, then you don't have to. But that's something that you might have to have a discussion with your technician that installed it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's why I was wondering, this louder rush of air that I'm hearing, if that's the electric furnace coming on all the time now.
It's either that or just the fan of the furnace kicking in. I mean, do you have the fan on continuous? It is on continuous circulation.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, that rush is probably the furnace kicking in. In this case, if it would have been on automatic, your fan, then I would have told you it's probably the fan kicking in. But in this case, you're saying it's a louder rush, so it's probably the furnace itself.
Does that help you out?
I thought the furnace shouldn't be coming on.
Well, no, if it's on a defrost cycle, it will come on. Or if your heat pump is not working, it will come on as well. Because sometimes what happens, if you have a heat pump and a furnace that are not compatible,
the
heat pump does not get the command to kick in. So instead, the furnace will kick in.
Okay, but they're the same...
It doesn't matter if they're the same. Just make sure that everything is well installed, I guess, from an installation perspective as well.
Okay. So are you recommending that it should be on auto and not on continuous?
No, the fan should be on continuous for sure.
Okay.
Not on auto.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. You too. 514-790-0800. That is the number to call us or text us. We have a text coming in from Vivian. Vivian asks Walter, good morning. Is an inside French drain as efficient as an outside one? Will my basement be more humid?
So, I mean, the quick answer is I don't like interior French drains. I would think of them as a last resort.
Why?
So, because what you're doing is you're inviting the water in channel it out. Mm. So that would be my number one. I'd rather stop the water at the source. That would be my number one issue with it. The second portion of it is, it's not cheap. Meaning, it's not like your savings are that
drastic,
significant that you would opt for that option rather than the other option. What I love about the exterior French drain is my access to my foundation, which will make me remembrane my foundation adequately and fill up all the cracks adequately. So my foundation is going to be good for a long time to come.
So it's two birds, one stone.
Exactly. Once I excavate around the perimeter of my foundation, now I can pressure wash my foundation. When the foundation was first built, they used to use tar as a coating for waterproofing.
Mm.
But the problem with that is with time, it dries, it disintegrates. So that tar with time kind of becomes porous because you have areas where it becomes weaker and deteriorates. Mm. What you do is you pressure wash your foundation. You could put an elastomeric membrane, inject all the cracks when if there's any cracks, put an elastomeric membrane, and then you could put a delta membrane, which is that corrugated membrane that will not allow the water to kind of stay around the foundation with hydrostatic pressure. So you have like a double layer of protection. That doing the French drain is not going to give you any of that.
Mm.
So just going to keep on inviting the water in and then channel it out. So I'm not a very big fan of that.
All right. Keep those calls coming in. 514-790-0800, the text line as well. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show. This is the Home Improvement Show. We answer all of your home improvement questions. Walter Assey, president of Murlofco, is here, standing by for your hard-hitting renovation questions. We're going straight to the phone lines, and we have got Vanny on the phone, and Vanny has humidity in the windows. Vanny, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Thanks. Thanks for
Take it away.
Yeah, and then thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Good morning. Yeah, we have this problem, like, especially in the winter, that the windows are, you know, they are crying, if I could put it that way. That there's a water
dripping. So poetic. The windows are crying.
Yeah. The windows and the doors are crying. Anyway, we have the plan to change them, but I just want to know if, please, there's a solution before this. Although we put, especially when my wife is cooking, you know, you see that this kind of, the whole windows and the door, the front door is all watery. Okay. What is the problem, please?
So chances are the problem is not from your windows.
Okay.
Chances are the problem is from your humidity levels in the home.
Okay.
So in the winter, we tend to close up everything, so we're not ventilating as well. We don't have open windows. We don't have air conditioning circulating either. So what happens is whatever lifestyle we have will start being reflective on the materials. And the easiest place to see condensation from relative humidity would be windows and glass panes.
Okay.
So in order to eliminate that, what I would recommend that you do is to buy yourself a hygrometer and check the relative humidity in the home. So
okay.
If it is above 55%, that's coming to tell you a story that there's something that you're doing in the home, either not ventilating enough or dehumidifying enough, or you're taking long showers, or you do a lot of open frying or open boiling in the home, or you have a lot of plants that are leading to that higher than normal humidity.
Okay.
One of the ways is you could flush the humid air out by opening windows and make sure that you do that from the front and the back so there's an air circulation. You want to do it for about 5 minutes. Not very energy efficient, but it's a way to get the humidity out of the home. Second one would be to have dehumidifiers, which is weird
to say. Yeah, we
have
three. Sorry that we have three in the house, but
Which is weird to say because in the winter we want to humidify, but sometimes the lifestyle of the occupants do ensure that you would need to dehumidify.
Okay.
The best way for you to kind of get to the bottom of this is to get a hygrometer and start monitoring your relative humidity in the home. So you want to keep it between 45 and 55 is really the optimal.
Okay.
Anything below that is too dry. Anything above that is too high.
All right.
Okay. And the windows themselves, I would look at them as a second, because usually if you have condensation on your windows, okay, if it's window related, it's more frosting or fogging than humidity.
No, it's just a condensation that they
Yeah, and then that usually happens in the colder days, which is a day like today, not normal. It's not that cold, so technically that should not happen. That's why I'm telling you it's probably the ambient air in the apartment or the home.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your call, Vanny.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. We've Bye-bye. Got Michael on the line who's been waiting patiently. Michael has a 1990s kitchen. And he is thinking about making some changes. Michael, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thanks for the call or taking my call. I'm calling about changing my kitchen cabinets. It's a condominium, small kitchen, 10 by 10, so two of the walls are covered. I believe it's 16 doors and 4 drawers. I don't really want to change the cabinets. Is it a good idea just to have the doors and the handles kind of refinished? or is that a bad idea? I'm not sure which way would be more expensive. I'm assuming just replacing the doors is cheaper.
So I'm going to try to confuse you a little bit more.
Wonderful.
When you do a kitchen, we're not usually, it's a mistake to just look at the general condition of the kitchen only. You have to also look at the layout, the functionality of the layout. If this is the original kitchen from the time the home was built by the developer, chances are a lot of these cabinets were made not custom, they were made standard in order to save money. So in a lot of cases, the layout would not have been optimal. Okay, So doing changing just the doors in this case, what you're doing is you're kind of just really keeping the same inefficient or less efficient layout and just, you know, making it look nicer. What you want to do is first look at, is there a way to improve the look, the layout, the work triangle, the space, even in certain cases, you know, the cabinets on a 45 that are not in style anymore, or, you know, things that you, could bother you and they're not trendy today. If the answer is yes to this, then just changing the doors, and because it's not just about the doors in this case, it's about the doors, the paneling, the crown molding, the kick plates, because, you know, anything that is off color would need to be changed. And just to throw another curveball at you, the most expensive part of a kitchen is not the boxes. The most expensive part is the doors, the paneling, you know, the hinges, the tracks, the accessories. The boxes are the cheapest, right? So okay. If you are planning to save money by keeping just the boxes, your savings are not as big as you think.
Okay. So what you're saying is I might save, I don't know, 25% of the total cost of the job by
Between 20 and 25%, that is correct.
Okay.
And then you have to just weigh your option to say, okay, I'm not a great fan of the layout. You know, do I put the 25% more and get a better layout? For me, a kitchen is never an expenditure. It's always an investment. Always, always, always you get your money back in the kitchen.
Right.
Whenever you sell, so it's like a piggy bank. You put it there, it's like an investment. Mm-hmm. It will pay you dividends when you sell, if it's right. Well done. If it's not
I like the layout. I like the layout personally.
Okay, so you like the layout years. And the boxes are in good shape.
Mm-hmm. They are.
Then by all means.
Okay, great.
So, and when you say the layout, I also want you to look at the height of the cabinets. So if it's, again, if it's a developer's or a contractor's kitchen, which is original, typically they would have started the boxes at 30 inches. Now,
you're talking off the floor. Well, actually,
not off the floor. Sorry. I'm talking about the upper cabinets.
Okay. There is about a foot between the ceiling and the top.
There you
cabinet.
Go. Well, that you don't want to see a void. That's a mistake in design and a mistake in dust collecting and a mistake in storage and a mistake in everything.
Okay.
So to begin with, that is a no-no as far as investment resale factor. A new owner would look and would see a dust collection, and it does not look as sexy or appealing for a kitchen.
So you would say put them right up to the ceiling, because the boxes would go right to the ceiling?
Not the boxes necessarily. So what you do is you do taller boxes. Mm-hmm. Instead of 30, you can go up to 39, 42. It depends on how high your ceiling is. Then you install a valance to kind of close that gap, and then you do a crown molding. So now you have more that wow factor. It's going to look a lot more dominant rather than just these flimsy 30-inch boxes that you're going to have on the top.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll take all that into consideration.
Michael, thank you so much for that, and good luck with that kitchen.
Well, thank you.
514-790-0800. That is the number to reach us on. You can call us or you can text us. Remember to leave your name when you text. You're listening to The Home Improvement Show. You are listening to The Home Improvement Show, and we're having a grand old time here. I'm Joanne Backus, and in front of me is Walter Essie, as always, president of Renofco, taking all of your questions, 514-790-0800. Call us, text us. We are here for you and your needs. Waiting patiently on the line is Alex. Alex has a question about a heat pump. Alex, can you hear us?
Yes, I could. Thanks for taking my call. I just heard part of a conversation a few callers ago, so and mine might be related. So around 2 in the morning, I heard a really loud sound coming from the heat pump. It sounded like a jet engine. So I got concerned, so I just switched it to emergency heat, and I'm just wondering, could that have been the heat pump defrosting, or is there something else going on?
Not the heat pump defrosting per se. Do you hear that often, or is the first time you heard that noise?
Honestly, the last time it happened was maybe 2 years ago, and I did the same thing. I just turned it off, and then after that, I waited. I turned it on again, and it was fine.
Okay, so there's a couple of things you want to do. Try to put the fan on auto, and just for a test, put it on auto, and try emergency heat, then go regular heat, okay? And if you can do that for a while, by which you hear the furnace and then you go outside, you hear the heat pump, just to ensure that, again, if you're worried about the fan not being fastened correctly, because that happens sometimes in newer models, that could be the issue. I can't tell you what other things there's a list of things that you have to go over, but I mean, if something that is intermittent, it's not as much something to worry about. If it's something that is happening multiple times per day, then I would actually worry about it.
Okay.
So if you're saying that randomly you heard it once, and you know, could be, you know, the it could be that, you know, it was in defrost mode, the furnace kicked in at that particular point, it could be that. But also, it could be other things. If it happens more often than you'd like, you're not supposed to be hearing a lot of loud noises often. Let me put it for you this way.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you for the call, Alex.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Howard. Yes, Jimmy Howard's waiting on the line. And mm-hmm. Howard has an issue with condensation in the skylight. Mm-hmm. Can you hear us?
Yes, thank you for taking the call. My daughter has a house. It's a fairly large house, 4 floors. There's an attic, and there's 3 other floors. There's only one thermostat on the main floor, but her attic is quite large, so she uses it as an office. And she just put in a new roof and a new skylight, and there's so much condensation that it drips, the floor gets wet. She has a dehumidifier in there, and she doesn't know what to do.
So she have one thermostat on 4 floors?
Is that on the main floor, just one on the main floor, that's it.
Okay, and then there's 2 floors above the main floor.
Exactly. And the attic is quite hot.
Okay, ouchie.
And it's dripping, no, and it's dripping, he's saying, all the way.
Yeah, dripping onto the floor. And there's no windows. So when you said to the man with the kitchen to open up the doors, but there's no windows up there. And it's very hot up there.
And new roof, he said.
Okay, and you
new roof, brand new skylight. I don't know if the skylight is like either a double skylight or a single skylight, if that makes a difference. But she called back the roofing company twice. They came with a specialist, says the roof was done properly, and around the skylight, there's no leaks. It's caulked well. It's installed well. It's nothing to do with the roof.
Okay, I mean, usually when it's a condensation, it's nothing to do with the roof or the skylight itself, unless it's water that we see coming in when you have a lot of rain, or when you have some type of ice buildup around the skylight, then we can look at that as a possibility. So your issue is probably lack of air circulation. I mean, the fact that you're telling me your thermostat is on the main floor and then you have 2 floors above that, then it is a kind of an issue, because all what you're getting is whatever settings that are being put on the main floor. In other words, your attic is not being tempered. It's not being weathered. Okay, it's your main floor now is the gauge for all the other floors, which is not really what you want to see. At a minimum, I would have had maybe another thermostat at the floor above or up there. Having said that, there's not much you could do as far as, beside dehumidifying, you don't have windows to open. possibly an heat recovery system would help. Okay, so maybe get a ventilation expert to come in if you, because if you don't have a domotic system, you might not be able to get away with installing another thermostat up on the third floor or fourth floor, in this case with the basement. So what you want to do is maybe look at having an air exchanger. Okay. Or a heat recovery system. That would help circulate the air or recycle the air that is in that area.
So a fan wouldn't help?
I mean, look, if you could try the fan and dehumidifying and this and that to circulate the air and see what happens. But again, if you find that this is a Band-Aid, then, you know, you might really want to look into having a heat recovery system or an air exchanger.
Thank you so much for your call, Howard. Good luck with all of it. We've got Bonnie on the line. Bonnie has a water tank that's not adjusted, I believe. Bonnie, take it away.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking the call. I'm really, really desperate right now. Hydro Solutions installed on 8th of November a 40-gallon giant water tank. Mm-hmm. I noticed immediately that there were big drops coming from the tap in the bathtub, falling into the bathtub immediately upon the installation. I tried very hard to adjust it, couldn't adjust it. On the 14th of November, I called them back. There was even steam coming from the water. It was so hot, and I scalded the top of my hand. Now, on the 14th of November, then they came to check again. They told me that they came for the first time on the 14th of November to check. They told me it was at 150 degrees, but they would lower it to 140 degrees. And I said, yes, but I think that's still too hot. Look, here on the tank, on the giant tank, it says that anything over 125 degrees is in serious danger of causing scalding. And I've already scalded. They could see the red mark on my right hand.
Oh, boy.
So I'm really desperate. I don't know what to do. I called them a second time, and they came on December 3rd now. Two men came. They were angry as heck. They checked the temperature and said, it's okay. And they lowered it to 137.5. And they said, it's okay, we can't lower it more than that, or you'll get sick from the water. The drops are still forming, and another friend who's a neighbor, who's a plumber, told me that this is quite serious, because this excessive heat coming from this water tank that they won't adjust down to the 125, which is highly recommended on the tank itself, saying that you were in danger of scalding.
Okay, so basically the water is way too hot, Walter. What could you do? They came back and...
What do I do about... They ignore me now. They're rude to me. They won't come. I'm in danger. And I have two bathtubs and I have four sinks in the house. And I'm scared to death that I'm going to have to replace all the rubbers, which are overheated by the excessive heat. They've lowered it to 137.5.
Okay, yeah, no, we understand.
125 that's recommended, right on the tank, and they just ignore
it. Yeah, no, yes, Bonnie. We understand, Bonnie. Yeah. Walter, yes.
So, I mean, obviously, you want to go with the manufacturer's recommendation. They can just, you know, make their own rules as they go. So
yeah,
if it's 125, it has to be 125.
Yeah.
Now, the water pressure as well, one of the areas that might have to be looked at is if the water pressure... is also set to be higher than suggested. So you might need to have a pressure relief valve and an expansion tank installed.
But I can't do anything because I'm under contract with them. In fact, I don't even have a contract, but you can't touch it or your contract is voided.
Correct. So what you could do is you could have someone come and do an inspection without having to necessarily touch it and then produce a report. Or you send them a letter saying XYZ is happening. If anything happens, I will hold you responsible. And you actually do it in writing and you name all the facts. You say your pressure, your temperature is set at 137.5. The manufacturer is saying 125. You know, this could happen, this could happen, this is happening, and so on and so forth.
So it's important, I think, Bonnie, to start documenting all of this. And again, as Walter just said, get an inspector and a separate inspector to come and take a look and document all of this to get
Where do I get that inspector? Who will come?
A plumber, a master plumber. You don't need a...
A master plumber.
Yeah, I'm just a master plumber.
Get someone outside of that original company to come in and look at it.
Because I went to Rona, and Rona told me the same thing, that yes, they showed me how Journal de Montréal had done a 2 or 3 page story on all the problems people were having.
Yeah, it's a tough one, Bonnie, but start documenting all of it. And thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with that.
The last question.
Bonnie, you have to hold your thought for a second, because we've got...
option. I'm going to tell them, remove your tank, and I will put in one of my own. Just come and remove your tank. Can I tell them to do that?
If they allow you to get out of contract, yes.
Well, I have no contract. There was nothing signed, nothing.
I know, but sometimes if you're being recorded, that could be also considered as a contract. Just go into the specificities with them before you do that. You don't want to be stuck with the bill for the next 34 years of
Okay,
life.
Thank you for that, Bonnie. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show. Keep those phone calls coming in, 514-790-0800. Walter Assey is here. This is the Home Improvement Show. Lots of questions coming in via our phone line and our text line. The number again is 514-790-0800. And I'm seeing here, there it is. John is on the line. John has a question about a noise in the furnace. This is a recurring theme. John, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, take it away.
Yeah, it's concerning that lady that called earlier this morning.
Okay.
And I had the same thing when I changed my furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was, it's over a bedroom, the return grill, what I did is I took it off and I put a cardboard about an inch off the floor on the back of the grill, and it stopped the noise. I think it's the fan is a different fan than we had on the old furnaces, and it pulls a lot more, and it was making a vibration on that return grill, and I got lucky. So
yeah, I'm going to give you maybe another, because I don't think she had the same type of issue.
Okay.
But in your case, instead of putting a cardboard and potentially blocking that return,
didn't block the whole return.
Yeah, what you could do is just change the type of grill you have.
That was the other option. Yeah.
Yeah, because there are some grills that will allow a lot more. The louvers are wider.
Yeah.
So you don't have to change particularly partially block the return.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're right. Sometimes even the size of the return or the hole is not big enough.
Yes, that's possible too. Yeah, but I find that the fan, it's basically like an aircraft engine. It seems to pick up speed as it goes along, whereas the old furnaces, the fan just kept turning at the same speed all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unless you have a variable speed furnace, which is what is really recommended now.
Yeah, that's what I have.
But you're right. It does cause an issue mostly with the returns, either because of the size of the grill is not adequate, or it's the old, the older fashioned return grills, which have louvers that are very tight. The blades are very tight to each other. Whereas, you know, in a case like this, it is very smart to look at the size of the return and the type of grill you have. You're absolutely
right. Well, I hope it could help her. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you so much for
calling. Hey, John, thank you so much for that. We have a question now on the text line about the cigarette smell. They didn't leave a name, but it says, can you tell me what can be used to remove the cigarette smell from a previous tenant? Is the cost going to be exorbitant, or is there a more modest option for me?
Okay. So, I mean, that's a good question. There is a couple of things that that they could do. First and foremost, we look at the condition of the walls. Is there any yellowish color, any residue on the walls themselves? If it's just a question of the smell and cosmetically speaking, everything looks okay, then she could try either an ozone machine or a hydroxyl machine.
An ozone machine?
Ozone machine, okay. Or a hydroxyl machine. These are machines that we typically would use to remove smoke smell from fires.
Wow.
So if they're strong enough for the fires, they should be strong enough for the smoke.
Rentable? Or not? She doesn't have to buy
rentable?
It?
I mean, you have to be very careful, because an ozone machine, you're not supposed to be occupying the home.
Ah.
because it could be very harmful. A hydroxyl, on the other end, is not. The only issue you would have is the hydroxyl needs a bit more babysitting because it does require a humidifier next to it. You want to have a relative humidity of up to 60%, and that have to be constant while it's working. So for it to be effective, you have to babysit that portion of the job.
Question, just because I'm thinking that there may be carpets in this kind of, what do you do with that?
Well, the carpets is another story because it is going to be more entrenched in the fabric. So that will definitely require a steam cleaning as well as the hydroxyl treatment.
Okay, I hope that...
If that doesn't work,
yeah,
then you're going to have to go above and beyond the call of duty, unfortunately. And you're gonna have to apply on the walls an odor blocker. So what you do is first you degrease the walls, you clean them with a degreaser,
like a regular or like stuff you would buy or something specific.
Well, I mean, there's something more specific for that. You could buy them from Hazmasters or Safety Express, and what that does is it cleans all the nicotine residue from the actual walls and ceilings. The ceilings, you can clean them with a degreaser. You have to use a chemical pad, unfortunately.
A chemical pad? Okay.
Yeah, because ceilings are typically flat paint, and flat paint is not washable. So you would have to use a chemical pad, chemical sponge, for that portion. Then you do the degreaser for the walls. And if that doesn't work, you're going to have to add another layer to this, which is applying bin or shellac on the wall, which is like an odor blocker, and then you paint over that.
Someone just texted in to just paint over the walls and put coffee grounds in the bowls. I'm not sure.
If this is
an old apartment, like, no, you know what I mean? If there was like a heavy smoker.
Yeah. So the paint would not necessarily seal the smell. You would have to go there with a shellac or a bin before you do the actual painting, or else you're just going to paint for nothing. The smell is going to linger on.
Question, if this person is a renter, whose responsibility is that? Is it not the owner's?
Well, technically, unless it's stipulated in your lease that they're not allowed to smoke or this or that, then technically it's a landlord because they haven't done anything to physically damage the apartment. Yeah. It's just their lifestyle.
Right. I guess it's a take it as it is. Okay, that does it for us for this show. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, available to all of you, of course, throughout the week. Go and visit his website as well. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
We'll speak again next Saturday.